Is this thing on?
This is Artscape, an investigation into the artistic and cultural landscape of our region, with your hosts, Katie and Harold. For the next hour, we are going to take a journey through sound and storytelling.
This podcast is brought to you by CFUV 101.9 FM, located on the unceded territories of the Lekwungen and Wasanik peoples, created with the generous support from the BC Arts Council. Join us as we uncover the people, happenings, and organizations
that make up the artscape in which we live.
How about we take a seat so that we can just catch people as they walk by? Is it recording?
Oh, yeah, I hit it. Oh. It records. Can you hear it? Okay.
I don't know if people are going to talk to us. Let's see. It's getting louder.
Is that okay?
Hey there. Hey, we're just wondering, do you know who that statue is of?
Pardon me?
Do you know who that statue is of?
No, because I'm just a tourist. I'm from Ukraine and come here to look.
Oh, cool. Welcome here. Okay, this guy's coming up. Hi there. Can we just ask you, do you know who this is a statue of?
I have no idea.
Oh, okay. All right, fair enough.
I have no idea. I'm sorry. I can't enlighten you.
Hey there. Hey, do you know who this is a statue of?
Yes, it's a statue.
Do you know who it's a statue of?
No.
Have you heard of Emily Carr before?
No.
Oh, are you from here?
No.
Oh, where are you from?
Duncan. Mm.
So, Emily Carr is a major figure in Victoria. You might have seen her statue outside the Empress Hotel with Woo, her little monkey, on her shoulder. Well, Emily is still here. She died in 1945, but she's lingering. And so is Wu, too, interestingly. She used to dress Wu up. She even taught her how to sew.
Yes, okay.
Well, we are sitting in the James Bay Inn, which Emily lived in for a couple of years, and where she did her painting, and where she had her room downstairs until she died. So we're in the right atmosphere. My name is Sally Jennings. I have been interested in ghosts for a long time. I used to work at Heritage Park, and there are hundreds of ghosts there. I wrote a book about them in Calgary. And then when I came to Victoria, lo and behold, there are hundreds of ghosts here, too. And I did, for 3 years, did a haunted ghostly tour with Grey Line buses at Halloween. And then I decided to write some of the stories down because everybody's interested in ghosts.
We're making a podcast about Emily Carr right now.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Cool.
We were just hunting for a ghost earlier.
Okay. What kind of ghost? Where?
We're at the James Bay Inn.
Yeah, that's a good spot.
Yeah.
Yes. If you guys have a chance, go to, oh my gosh, Garrick's Head, because I had an experience in their washroom. Me and my girlfriend changed my life. But seriously, it did.
Or even in the Gatsby.
The Gatsby. You know,
we
have a ghost in the Gatsby.
Walkie,
we housekeep.
And we carry walkies. And
yeah.
It's gone, like, done sirens. And I'm like, okay, go
and it's
back
always
to
like,
else. Oh,
yeah.
No, it wasn't. And it was, weirdly enough, it was in...
Which is a
which is
nursing home.
About this, but it was in the Emily
and,
Carr room.
And she slept in
Gatsby,
her room was
up,
downstairs in the
perhaps she's trying to speak to us.
On the far back left.
Very cool.
It's been changed now, and it's the gentleman's loo.
The name of our podcast.
But so many people have seen her in there that they've put a picture of her outside so that people can recognize who she is. There was once, and I got this directly from staff, there was once a time when Jesse, I think he was a cook, he went into the bathroom and he said, "Oh, I always feel as though I'm pissing on Emily Carr's grave when I go in there." And his glass of beer levitated and was turned and thrown down into his lap. No hands, you know, nothing to see. But she'd obviously got the pip, and she turned this up and tipped it in his lap. And there are lots of times when people feel touched down there, just touched on the shoulder or whatever. But that's where she died.
Harold Hijazi here, so, with Artscape.
She's lingering around.
I'm just at the James Bay
when
Inn.
She was
had an interview with Sally Jennings.
Before she died, she used to paint her paintings.
We feel
up
as if we may have evoked the ghost of Emily Carr. So I'm going to walk in through the pub entrance down in the basement and walk straight for the corner left male's bathroom. And see if I can spot the ghost of Emily Carr.
Fragrance in here.
The smell of a urinal. Hello, Miss Emily Carr. And it's quite noisy.
To visit the nuns quite often.
Are you in here? There's really ugly brown walls. My name is Harold. I'm an artist here in Victoria. Equally.
I know her
ugly
mother is
brown
there.
Floor. I was just wondering if you might have some words to share with
illness,
the community here, the arts community.
The lighting is really bright.
You've got fairly weak
fluorescent
feeble at the end.
Ceiling lighting.
And her mother used to sit at the top of the stairs and wait for the kids to come up to bed. And apparently she
There's
still
lots
does.
Of sounds of water.
But we can't go up and have a look because.
Perhaps if you're
private,
not feeling like talking right now,
now,
maybe there's some way that you can give me some kind of sign to let me know that you're here.
Car feelings.
I don't know that she's seen at the Empress or any of the major buildings.
Mostly just...
let me see. Oh, there's one person who saw a couple of
hooded
figures.
Well, now that I'm talking to you, I'd just like to apologize on behalf of the Victoria Arts community for losing your collection to
the
Vancouver Art Gallery because Victoria couldn't get its shit together on in time. Yeah.
But her father's...
I'm just trying to feel...
Office was just down on Wolf Street. So this is the whole area where she was around all the time.
The atmosphere is feeling a little gray.
That's the woo-woo story.
Almost a bit cold in here.
Those are the main stories. She may well be in the
hollow.
The house of all sorts that she built, the boarding house on Simcoe. It was, to start with, an apartment building, small. And there was the Depression, times got worse, and she had to make it into a boarding house. So I guess people had separate rooms rather than apartments. There are apparently up in the attic, there are still some paintings of hers on the wall and on the ceiling. But they're stuck there. But she was very unkind to her tenants. I don't know whether she ever haunts the place now. But she turned a coal scuttle upside down on one of her tenants' heads because she couldn't pay the rent. One of the funny things she did was when she served fish for lunch or dinner to her tenants, she took her goldfish bowl out of the room so the goldfish wouldn't be upset
advocate.
Because they were eating fish.
She is a
fish.
Women's advocate as well. That's true.
She's a leader of women's rights.
And she was generally pretty snappy
Actually,
with her tenants. And
told
them not
no
to turn the heat up all
it.
The time.
Oh, okay.
But they did, of
yeah,
course.
Yeah, she's pretty cool.
And she broke some guy's
Have
glasses.
Have a nice day.
Hey.
The water's off at the ministry.
Hey, do you know who this is a statue of?
A real character.
It's Emily Carr and Woo.
I don't know her dog.
This was her home. And who is Emily Carr to you?
That, a woman, an artist,
she
who lived in Victoria, in James Bay.
You're from town.
She's very familiar.
We're just
with
learning
many years ago.
Trying to
she's famous.
Figure out why she's
but she's, yeah, she's a painter.
Yeah, that's a really good question. There, somebody must have written about this. I don't know.
I think
I don't
it's...
You know where her house is, her home, that she grew up in. It's up the street.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
And if you go...
So just up government?
Up government.
Okay.
Yeah. Just about two blocks past Toronto Street.
I see.
You'll find her house on the left.
And she's there. She's living there.
Oh, no. She's dead.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Long time dead.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah.
We were hoping to interview her.
Oh.
Sometime.
Oh, I see. Well, no, you're not. You're going to miss that window. Uh-huh. If you go up
to because they're just people who are dead. Their energy.
House and go left.
And you know how you feel energy from electricity or something like that.
White.
They are just energy.
Quite unusual.
And that's why ghosts can manipulate.
Which was known as the House of All Sorts.
Turn them on and off.
And that was her house.
Lights.
That's where she.
Anything that's electrical.
People came and stayed for, you know, a week at a time, a month at a time.
They can. Draw the energy. You've seen the ghost stories on TV, I'm sure, ghost adventures. They draw the energy from batteries and the cameras.
Anyway, so this is fun.
There's a lot of crossover, interesting physics going on.
She was not a very attractive
more
person.
Out about it.
Maybe when she was younger, but as she got older, she was, you know, she didn't care a lot about
worried about it.
I should say that differently. She dressed for doing art
on the other side
in the world.
And I don't think
not
it's
in the studio.
Special. I think it's quite normal. Yeah.
So, are you going to do
get
a paper
messages
or something
in different ways perhaps?
Right.
You don't
okay.
just for, talk, but you get an idea in your
DC
head.
Arts Council, actually.
Oh. Yeah. Okay.
And you know it didn't come from you.
Here.
Yeah, that's nice. Mm-hmm. Good for you.
Well, maybe
and
we
if you act on it, you'll find your.
Yeah, maybe we should go up to
the
House of All Sorts.
Because they realize,
I want to
she's
check
listening.
Out that house on Simcoe.
And they can help
right?
to
sorry,
manipulate your life, help you with little
no,
problems.
What, the House of All Sorts or
I
her
mean,
house
you'd help
that she
more
grew up in?
Somebody listen to you, wouldn't you? So,
if you go up to her house, which
I
is on
that's,
government,
that's what they do.
And you
and
just go
have.
To the corner. Past
it's
her
not
house.
That life stops.
Go left.
It's
head
just
toward
a
Beacon Hill Park.
Environment, but you still
about
to learn
a block in from Beacon Hill Park, you'll find the House of All Sorts.
Helping other people.
Is it walkable?
I don't know that it's marked,
okay.
except in books.
You know, they go
but it might be. I have, you know, I walk around here a lot, but I. I don't see things anymore that, you know, so familiar to me.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. That's great. And
we
do. Thanks
so much. Yeah, good luck. Enjoy your research. That's great.
I appreciate it. Have a great day.
But if you just think of them as people, they're helping you, you're helping them.
Before we go there?
So, in a way... You shouldn't be too concerned.
So would you say you consider yourself clairvoyant? Is that a part of it?
I'm working on it. For many years, I have done meditation, which is supposed to open you up. And I haven't had any great, brilliant lightning flashes. But, you know, it's coming more and more. And I realize that they are feeding me ideas the whole time for everybody, not just
the
me.
The car drives out.
And
perfect.
For example, I have a lady who's called Patricia. And I feel that she's a sort of 1950s secretary person, dressed in a tweed skirt, very proper, very organized. And she looks after me. I've had lots and lots of students because I teach from my house part-time. And I never worry about students clashing or an appointment being at the wrong time because inevitably they'll change the appointment. It's magic.
Come on.
It really works. I mean, this has been for years and years.
Play. Oh, wow.
Go.
Well, my name's Godfrey, and I remember going in a house with my mother as a very small child, and there was a monkey there, and it grabbed some razor blades out of a seashell and started chewing them, and this woman said, "No!" And the monkey did not cut its mouth. That was Emily Carr's woo. And my mother met her selling something. She was banging on the door of Emily Carr's house. And Emily Carr shooed her away. And my mom went nuts and started pounding on the door. And Emily Carr opened the door and said, "Oh, you've got some jam. Come on in, little girl." And they became friends. And when my mom married my dad later on, they bought all their dogs, sheepdogs, from her. And strangely, crows would go to her place to die and end their life there sometimes as old crows.
Oh my God.
Oh yeah.
You know what's amazing? The next episode I'm working on is Emily Carr.
Mm-hmm.
It's no surprise to me that your family has intertwined with them, because you actually have always reminded me of Emily Carr. You know that?
Not in looks, I hope.
When I realized that you reminded me of Emily Carr, I had never even seen her before at that point. Yeah. So it was just like the spirit of Emily Carr. Yeah.
This is still recording, I hope.
Yeah, this is all recording.
Okay, upstairs I have an ashtray.
Okay, yeah.
And it says Clee Wick on the back of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of her pot boilers to make money. She made a lot of, it's probably worth a lot of dough. It's in the house, locked up. I had to say that. It says Clee Wick on the bottom. That was her nickname, and I read somewhere that she was given that nickname in Euclid.
Do you know who this is a statue of here?
This is important.
Yes, this is Emily Carr.
Oh, okay.
If you read that over there, you'll get a...
Because there are no R's in the Chinook language.
Clee probably the greatest crime. Canadian artist. And she grew up in this city. She was the daughter of a doctor's family. And probably broke all the rules you could break.
Oh, neat. Great.
She ran off at a young age to California to study. Well, she was probably one of the only, if not the only, woman artist in Canada. So that would differentiate her from others. She was just very atypical, and she made art from nature. Or created art out of what she saw in nature. So lots of huge pictures of forest and things.
I think it's
you know, back
good.
At earlier times.
It's I don't. I think it gets a lot more attention than it deserves. I think there's a lot of people working in the art world around the same time that did equally or even better art. So
that were women.
That were women, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I feel like she was like sort of highlighted and kind of elevated to some sort of goddess level because people weren't creative enough in thinking about other people that were also.
I see. And why did they make this, do you know?
She's a renowned Canadian artist, and she was born and lived here, so it's a statue to her.
I see.
There's actually an explanation over there.
Oh, I see. Are you a fan of her work, would you say?
It's not my cup of tea, but yeah.
Cool. Do you know why there's a monkey on her shoulder?
She had a pet monkey. She was a bit eccentric.
I see.
She lived at the turn of the century, and that was kind of unusual, but still would be.
Okay. Could you say some things, and I'm just going to get your levels going.
Yeah. Hi, my name is Ingrid Mary Percy, and I am in Cornerbrook, Newfoundland and Labrador. And I'm talking to Harold.
Very nice.
Phone check.
Indeed. Well put. You've got it. Okay. I think... we are good. Could you just maybe count to 10 for me, please?
Sure. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Okay. I have to ask, did I catch you on your cell phone, or is this a home line?
And this is a am.
No, I mean, I went. Do you want to call me back?
I went to Emily Carr.
No, it's better on the landline. So it's fine as long as we're on.
I did my undergraduate degree there.
Right.
BFA painting. I'm a painter. I'm a female Canadian artist. Yeah, and I did my my MFA in Victoria at UVic. And I live in James Bay when I'm in Victoria, so I just live around the corner from Emily Carr House. So, I mean, Emily Carr is somebody who obviously I've, you know, known about since I've been a student. I'm a Canadian artist. So yeah, I've known about her for a long time. And but I'd say like in the last 5 years, I've become particularly interested in her and have been doing more and more research in and around Emily Carr. So yeah,
I see.
The symposium kind of a reflection of that.
I see. And was there a switch in your mind that went off when you realized something interesting about Emily Carr? Was there something particular there? Or?
Well, I guess what happened was about four years ago. I've been teaching at Benfield Campus Memorial University here in Newfoundland and Labrador. Mm-hmm. And it's a small campus. So I tend to hang out with people that are not necessarily in visual arts. My friends are sociologists and geographers and anthropologists and writers and poets. So I had a friend here, Stephanie McKenzie, who's a poet, and she had actually written a book of poetry about Emily Carr. And we decided to mount a symposium here in Newfoundland that on Emily Carr that would bring scholars from Victoria to Newfoundland. So Stephanie and I worked on that, and I suppose in the process of working on that,
is?
I just...
I do. You know, is that Emily Carr?
I don't know. I just suddenly...
Well, now I know.
Saw...
That makes sense. Yes, I believe she had a dog.
Suddenly,
I read her book, Klee Wick.
I mean, she wasn't...
That's a monkey.
...my favorite artist when I was an art student. And,
what's a monkey?
But I guess in recent years...
On her back, but there's a dog beside her, correct?
There's a dog and a monkey.
Okay, yes, I see that now. Thank you for enlightening me about this sculpture. I'm very grateful.
Do you know anything about Emily Carr?
I know a bit, yes. I actually had a very good discussion yesterday about Emily Carr, wherein we discussed whether or not her art was worthy and whether she was... undermining colonial ideals about First Nations art and people, or if she was in fact informing them. We didn't come to a conclusion. Yeah. That's what I know.
But what do you think?
I think as a woman of her generation, it was really impressive what she did, you know, going out and experiencing First Nations culture firsthand. And sure, you could argue that by producing artworks based on First Nations culture, she was commodifying them. But at the same time, she was bringing awareness to First Nations culture to a wider audience.
Is Emily Carr your favorite Canadian artist?
Wasn't recognized until later in her career.
No, I wouldn't say that.
As being an important artist.
Who's your
favorite
Canadian?
Recognized much more so after she died, right? So it's just interesting how Emily Carr resonates on so many different levels with so many different people.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask what inspires you about Emily Carr? Can I turn the artist statement around on
That's
you?
That's a good question. That is such a good question. I think it has, for me, I think it has something to do with place.
Uh-huh.
I grew up in Vancouver, and...
But, because she's from the West.
And then I, you know...
I suppose?
I grew up in Vancouver, and then I moved to Victoria.
She persuaded her father to send her to an art school in the States.
And for me, like, the West Coast, there's just something about...
And then she left... BC, and she went to
place
France,
like the forest, the trees,
that art,
the beaches,
she went to England,
the mountains,
she was
that
in hospital,
has become kind of
and then she just started something else.
I'm really not sure.
So maybe for me,
I don't know that much.
And I mean, I also...
When you think of Emily Carr, what do you think of? What comes to
well,
you?
Well, I guess, I don't know,
her art, she mostly, artist, this statue, I live fairly near it.
How would you describe her art if you could?
It's very West Coast,
I relate
I would
to
say.
Carr on that level as well, yeah.
That's very nice.
You know, I live in James Bay. I kind of, sometimes when I'm in James Bay, I walk along the street and I think, oh, wow, that's really interesting. I'm kind of exactly the same street that Emily Carr walked along. And you know, you can still see where she painted. You can kind of go to Beacon Hill Park or sit on the beach, Dallas Road, and, you know, you're sort of looking at the world through her eyes. And I don't know, I guess, yeah, I suppose it's place and fact, being an artist, being a painter, being female.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And so you mentioned how you're interested in her depictions of place and how that connects to you, mm-hmm, having grown up in Vancouver.
Yeah. Do you like her art?
And
yeah. I do.
What's your favorite piece by Emily Carr?
I'm wondering about
so many. I don't know the names.
The way in which Emily Carr that, is known to embody the spirit of BC and Vancouver Island or the West Coast in general. How do you think that comes through in her artwork?
Vancouver, so she's an artist as well.
Well, you know, that was a really big thing for her. She writes. I mean, she wrote so much. She wrote journals. You know, stories.
How would you describe the style of her art?
So, if you read her writing is amazing. It's so clear and true and honest. So in her writing, she constantly talks about this desire to capture this sense of spirituality in a way that she gets from nature, that she feels from nature. I suppose I don't think anybody can not feel that. I don't know if everybody would call it spirituality or spiritualism. But I mean, I don't think you can live in BC and walk through a forest, like an old growth forest, and not feel this sense of awe.
I'm really not an expert.
So it's kind of like the Rockies. First time you see the Rocky Mountains, I mean, they're awesome.
She's an artist, like Robert Bateman.
You can put a name on it.
An artist as well, right?
I wouldn't necessarily call it. And there's
a lot to be said for art.
You know, for me, it's
really
amazing beauty of
what's probably the main thing to be said.
It's an amazing wonder of nature. And it's just, and in the West Coast, like, the trees are so big. Everything looks like it's on steroids. Like, everything's big.
It's an expression of life.
Verdant, and, you know, and
it's
and it's amazing. Like, when I was a kid growing up in Vancouver, my parents used to send me to a forest warden camp in the summer. And we would go up.
So do you think Emily Carr expresses life,
then? And camp path up near Squamish. And we would go into the woods and, survive and eat the roots of ferns and things like that. And
she was noted for, I think she was
so much about, I don't know, sort of
noted for her
that feeling of like the rainforest and incredible
expression.
They're amazing, the
beauty of
endlessly.
Yeah, you might say just the beauty of.
You're sounding like you're really longing for home.
I love Newfoundland too. I love contrast.
Yeah, amazing that you're living this polar opposite life.
It's good.
Polar is a good word.
I'm trying find the best words to choose what she said.
It's pretty warm.
Like I say, I don't really know a lot about Emily.
I know.
And I don't really know a lot about Robert Bateman. I know more about him than I would know about Emily Carr.
It's pretty amazing to be so far from D.C. and yet still in Canada.
Cool.
So that's another kind of thing
awesome.
I'm
Well, thanks so much for signing with us for a bit. Appreciate it.
No problem.
Yeah, have a great day.
You too. Take care. Kind of a speaking point too.
You guys enjoying the statue? It's fun,
like,
hey?
Like, how do you kind of describe Canada? And I think she kind of offers a way to discuss different threads of
and
identity.
How do you feel about her depictions of Coast Salish indigenous culture in her artwork?
Oh, that's such a complex question. And at the symposium, Harry Newman, who is an indigenous British Columbian artist, he's going to discuss the whole idea of cultural appropriation. And what's the difference between inappropriate cultural appropriation and inspiration? So, I don't know. I mean, it's...
Pardon me, is that the focus of his talk, the difference between inappropriate appropriation and inspiration?
Yes. Mm-hmm. He's calling it appropriation versus inspiration.
I see.
Yeah. And he's... so I'm really looking forward to what he has to say about that. But, I mean, for me, I think it's really complex.
I think there was also a time.
It's problematic,
for
in the
sure.
90s.
No question.
The 1990s when, Emily Carr was really, her work and was really derided, she was really, there was really heavy criticism laid upon her. Now it seems to be more, It's a little more nuanced now. I think it's not as sort of...
I'm not an expert
on Emily Carr. That's why I really love organizing these symposiums, because I can kind of bring together all these other people that have amazing kind of, scholarship and thoughts from a lot of different perspectives. Mm-hmm. I guess I kind of relate to Emily Carr more as an artist, and I don't know, and as I said, as a female painter.
We do a big mural, and I cut it up into little squares, one of her paintings, and then I get each group to do like one square, and they don't know what they're doing until the very end, and then we put it all together. That's all I do about Emily Carr.
And you do that with an Emily Carr piece?
Yeah.
Very cool. And what do you tell them about Emily Carr when the block painting is done, completed, reassembled?
Just that she was a painter from Victoria.
I see.
Who painted a lot of First Nations things, and we have a lot of First Nations in our school. So.
I see. Well, that's good then.
A lot of totems and stuff.
Lots of totems?
In her paintings.
Okay, let's go. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Great. What show are you guys for?
This is Artscape.
Artscape.
It's a podcast about, Have you heard of Artscape before?
Not Artscape, no, but I've watched it.
Harold and Katie. I'm Carrie Mason. I'm an art historian and art consultant. I've built my career around Emily Carr for 38 years. I've been writing about her, curating exhibitions about her, and teaching courses on her. I began teaching courses here at the University of Victoria in 2001, and I'm happy to say I was the first person ever to teach a course on Emily Carr at UVic, and I just love teaching courses on Emily Carr. I teach for other institutions as well, at the University of Colorado and the Victoria College of Art, the Vancouver Island School of Art, and teach for continuing studies as well as for the Department of Art History and Visual Studies. My husband says that I teach Emily Carr and courses, because from Emily Carr, I've extended my courses to include the Group of Seven, other Canadian women artists, Emily Carr and First Nations more particularly, and Introduction to Northwest Coast, Contemporary Northwest Coast, Women Artists of the Northwest Coast, specific courses on Haida Gwaii, Kwakwaka'wakw territories. And this reminds me that another aspect of my career with Emily Carr is I do travel studies for UVic, where with 20 students, we retrace the steps of Emily Carr, her 1912 and her 1928 sketching trip. So we go everywhere she went and are in the villages she was in, look at many of the poles she was looking at. Of course, a number of the poles she was looking at are no longer in the villages, but you still were able to absorb the feeling of the villages.
And do you know anything about Emily Carr?
I always have a good time doing it.
I know that.
Let's see what else.
I'm very
about
fond of Emily
an introduction.
Carr,
as
so
an art consultant,
so
I work
my daughter
on Emily Carr authenticating
her.
And appraising for institutions and collectors internationally.
That's so precious.
And locally.
And so, what was it about
so
Emily Carr?
There's different
that
aspects
you to
of Emily Carr and First Nations that come.
Well, I find her painting. It looks so simple.
Where's my desk? And I haven't even talked
it
about
makes,
starting
it. It inspires me to
that,
want to try it, you know?
Before you were born.
And, but at the same time, I don't think...
I run the Emily Carr Gallery
I think
for
her
the
work
province
is,
of British Columbia.
As a woman is ahead of her
gallery
time.
In the location of Emily Carr's father's shop at 1107 Wharf Street.
Yeah.
And that's where I started my journey with
Emily
Carr.
Emily Carr
curated 27 exhibitions of Emily Carr's work.
Years
and
ago,
for
called
11
the
years,
of it all.
The Emily Carr Gallery was,
and
my,
it was
my life.
Held
and
here
then
at the
grad
Newcomb
school
auditorium.
Brought me into teaching Emily Carr. And
it was a story about
teaching Emily
Carr.
Carr. Just
and
love.
It was a great play, and I was involved as a ticket ripper. So
just that she's so very
I knew
that
all
there's
the songs
such
the,
complexity
the
to her as a person
so, yeah,
and to
Emily
her work and the fact
heart.
That there's always something
thank
new
you.
Coming
so much.
Along
thank
and there's always people
excuse me there sir hey man hey I'm just
wondering do you know who that statue's of
so
just that
now
just wondering
I have
if you know who the statue's of
parents
there.
Have taken no. Courses from the.
You didn't want to talk to us.
All about Emily Carr.
Oh,
I think that's so cool.
Town,
I want to know all
yeah,
about
yeah.
Emily Carr.
Where are you from?
Nanaimo.
Oh, very cool.
It's pretty
yes,
funny
cool.
when you just roll up to someone like, hi.
Before? I'm involved
yes.
in.
Okay. That's who this is?
That's an international.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah, are you familiar with her work at all?
Not a whole lot, no.
In 2 years, it actually extended into three this past
if you had
year,
to state one fact about Emily Carr.
It started out with a
I probably couldn't
gathering
state anything.
In Newfoundland.
Okay,
yeah. Honestly.
But
yeah.
other than that, she's a human being. We know that.
Well, and she's an author or a painter, which is it?
Both, actually.
Both? Yep. Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
so we brought
yeah.
Emily Carr.
Yeah. So we're just trying to find out why Emily Carr is the most
to Newfoundland for
preeminent
the
or the preeminent Canadian artist.
2 years
yes.
later, we would
so we're trying to figure that out today.
Okay.
First
how you make it out?
Specific to Atlantic and then.
Oh, she is. Yes.
We thought, okay, now we'll do Atlantic to Pacific.
Yeah.
And the result of that was 2 weeks ago, the Emily Carr Symposium at the Art Gallery, which
have
was
you been
a
to the art
sold
gallery
out
Greater Victoria before?
Success.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Or the Vancouver Art Gallery.
And 2 years from now,
would you say
back
that Emily Carr is similar to Van Gogh in that she wasn't really celebrated while she was alive and people weren't like recognizing her as such?
She had much more recognition than people think. She was always a really good storyteller, so she tended to exaggerate this, oh, I don't get any recognition, I don't have any friends. For 15 long years I didn't paint, all of which are exaggerations. And we see wonderful instances like the year 1937 when Emily Carr was worried about paying her medical bills having just suffered her first heart attack. And there was a tremendous rallying around her in central Canada and Montreal, especially people buying her paintings. And she was just astonished at the size of the check that she she received, and of course didn't have to worry about her medical bills at all. People don't realize that when she came home from France, she came home just at the end of the year 1911, but she had in mind to travel up the coast and work on what she said was the serious work of her life, quote-unquote, her Indian collection, that the way she financed this was by selling paintings she had created in France. So getting back to your question, Harold, one of the things I really respect and enjoy about Emily Carr was just how self-sufficient and resilient she was, how she just, you know, paid her own way, stood on her own feet, and went ahead. She didn't care what people thought about her, mostly, but she persevered when a lot of other people would have given up.
So do you, can you speak to her impetus for wanting to like represent Northwest Coast Indigenous poles and all that kind of imagery that she painted?
Sure. When she was born in 1871, two-thirds of the population of Victoria was First Nations. She was born into an environment that was predominantly First Nations. Wash Mary came and did the laundry for the family. There were Coast Salish people and other First Nations cultural groups coming and going through Victoria's kind of clearinghouse for First Nations coming down into Puget Sound. So her backyard, Beacon Hill Park, had often First Nations people camping on the beach, pulling up the canoe and stopping on the beach. She was also the daughter of someone who respected First Nations people. We have this in the diary of her father, Richard Carr. He spoke out against the treatment of the First Nations in the United States in the early decades of the 19th century. So she grew up interested in First Nations people. She loved the stories her father told about circumnavigating Vancouver Island and what he had seen when he did that. She really had an epiphany when she was on a trip to Alaska in 1907 with her sister, Alice. It was first just going to be a pleasure trip, but this was her first trip to villages where there were poles. So the ship stopped at Alert Bay, Campbell River, Prince Rupert, and they went up to Alaska. And these, she said, these poles and the villages spoke deeply to her. When she was in Alaska in 1907, part of the touristy thing to do was to go to the Totem Walk, a kind of theme park that was set up by Governor Brady that had poles on one side and trees on the other, kind of colonnade. And she was sketching, and this sort of planted a seed, you know, sketching these Tlingit poles. And when she came back down to Victoria on this trip, stopping again in Campbell River and Alert Bay, she said, "My mind is made up. I'm going to picture as many Indian villages and people and poles as I can." So she committed to what she called her Indian collection then in 1907. And although she was teaching in Vancouver, every break she got, she would go to a First Nations village. If she didn't have the time to go to Alert Bay, which she did in 1908 and 1909 and many times after that, she went to Sechelt, which was closer, or up to Hope or Lytton, and started to build the serious collection of her life. It reminds me, though, of another myth that Emily Carr did totem poles and then she did forests. In fact, she was interested in the landscape always and in First Nations always. And for her, it was really all the same. You know, the artwork springs from the environment, springs from the people and the place. And so the tree is a totem, is a tree, right? it's all one in Emily Carr's mind. The more time she spent in First Nations villages, the deeper her appreciation for the people. At first, she thought, like most people in the early 20th century, that soon there would be no First Nations people. Everyone would be assimilated. She writes in several places about the fact that the Poles would soon be gone. And in fact, they were being taken away for different museums. They were being burned, taken for souvenirs too by people coming into villages they had no business being in. But she came to understand that in certain villages, even though the potlatch ban was in place, the culture was alive and well. These were living villages. And so she started studying, and she asked people. She asked people to tell her about what was on the pole. She wanted to know. And it was a lifelong quest. Her best friend was a Coast Salish woman, Sophie Frank, a basket weaver. And she learned from Sophie. Sophie learned from her, too. So there are many different connections Emily Carr had with First Nations people.
Just mind right is to that end. I think it's interesting to know how First Nations people react to the First Nations work of Emily Carr. And so any chance I get to speak with an artist about Emily Carr's work, I'm curious and say, what do you think about that? And most recently, Carrie Newman was speaking at the symposium, and somebody from the floor said, well, do you think Emily Carr is guilty of appropriation of First Nations imagery? And he said, you have to look at the context in how it was created. Why was she doing it? And what she wasn't doing it for profit. That wasn't why she was painting it. And so he said she's not guilty of appropriation. And I've spoken to people in Haida Gwaii who are the grandchildren and great-grandchildren of the friends of Emily Carr's who took her into all the different abandoned villages like Tenu and Skidans. And I said, what's the family story? How does the family view what Emily Carr did? The Russ family I'm thinking of in particular. And I was told that she was a nice old duck. They liked her.
Yeah. So would you say that Emily Carr is the best Canadian artist then?
I mean, she's pretty much the only one that I know. So I.
Oh, really?
I mean, well, if I thought about it, I probably could think of a few more, but probably the most well-known one that I can think of.
Could you think
to
of
anyway.
One more Canadian artist?
Probably not.
It could be any kind of art. It doesn't have to be visual art. Just any Canadian.
I'm not a huge fan of, like, painting art in general. Like,
oh,
I just learned about Emily Carr in school. That's how I know her. I know she's in Ross Bay Cemetery. Oh, live cool. near her house as well, so.
That's rad.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen Emily Carr's ghost before?
No, I haven't.
I see. What kind of class was it that you learned about Emily Carr?
Language arts, probably.
In high school or university?
High school, middle school even, I think. Huh. Yeah, I know. I went to South Park, which is just over there, pretty close to Emily Carr House. So we'd go into Beacon Hill Park, and they'd teach us kind of her drawing techniques as well. And I've been to Ross Bay Cemetery, seen her grave,
very
that kind of thing.
Cool.
Yeah.
What's the most memorable thing you can think of learning about Emily Carr?
It is. Yeah.
I mean, that shit a monkey was pretty cool.
But I find all her work interesting, her rugs and her pottery, her writing, her poetry. No, it's all her political cartoons. There's so many different aspects to her creativity.
And do you think that it's because of all the different mediums and means of engagement that we've put her in this place of the main West Coast artist of some kind, if you follow?
Well, I think it all contributes to why she should be the preeminent West Coast Canadian artist. I say preeminent Canadian artist.
Uh-huh.
I'm often asked why she wasn't a member of the Group of Seven, for example, and her stature was equal to any member in the Group of Seven. And for that I say they said, you are one of us. They recognized that her stature, that her contribution was equal to theirs. So why wasn't she a member? It was a boys' club. It was a little boys' club. But as soon as the Group of Seven disbanded in 1932 in favor of a much larger group, because they recognized there were a lot of great artists, Emily Carr first and foremost, who should be included in the Canadian art movement, the Canadian Group of Painters was formed. First person they invited to join the Group of Seven was Emily Carr. There's a tendency here, though, for people to think, "Oh, well, she's a local artist." They don't realize just how qualified she is to be on the international stage. And in fact, studies show that internationally, the two best-known Canadian artists are Tom Thompson and Emily Carr.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. There was a large collection of paintings sent to the Tate Gallery in 1938. So there was David Milne and Emily Carr and the Group of Seven and all the usual suspects. Out of all the artists, Emily Carr was singled out and called a genius by the art critic for the Manchester Guardian. So
it was strange that the first and only...
She's just such a mystery.
Especially lighted studio I ever owned should have been a torment to me to work in. Through the studio only could you enter my four room.
Emily Carr is a mystery.
A tap at the door, I was caught there at my easel. I felt exposed and embarrassed.
These were her streets and stomping grounds. Dallas Road, Government Street.
It was a curious agony. I'd possibly, it was the ridicule my work had been subject to,
so that people could not look over my shoulder.
In this house,
art and religion, you can't separate. For real art is religion, a search for the beauty of God deep in all things. Emily Carr.
Art would keep poking me from the unexpected places. Art being so much greater than ourselves.
Victoria
has been very stern about my art, being conservative in her tastes. She hated my particular kind. She, believing in having
the will to do
evil,
the Victorians had always been at best apathetic towards her work. But tradesmen calling at her door had sometimes asked to see her pictures, and she felt this request was made from genuine interest in art. She convinced the idea that a gallery for the ordinary man was really needed. She discussed this plan with me, as with other friends, and I tried to persuade her to abandon it. I couldn't say so. But it seemed to me that the interest of the coal carrier, the garbage collector, and the butcher was more a curiosity about Emily herself, her dogs, and her studio than any hungering after pure art. Her way of life was so natural and necessary to her that she was quite unconscious of the fact that many ordinary people regarded her as something of an oddity. This plan, therefore, half idealistic, half practical, was doomed to be abortive.
Where the exponents of art on Vancouver Island are extremely exclusive set. They liked what they liked and would not tolerate no innovations. My change in thought and expression had angered them into fierce denouncement. To expose a thing deeper than its skin surface was to them indecency. They ridiculed my striving for bigness, depth. The club held exhibitions, affairs of tinkling teacups, tinkling conversation, and little tinkling landscapes, but not weekly executed in watercolors. I would invite
none
the people who walked
in
Beacon
Hill Park
on
Saturday
afternoons
and on Sunday.
A baker,
my house
and a coal
was
carrier,
practically
good
in
gracious,
Beacon Hill Park.
Ordinary people would never
Lower
dream
East had just fallen vacant. Lower West
would have
was going to be empty next week.
I had a carpenter cut me a connecting door. This gave
a
me
very
six
show,
and
large,
so successful,
well-lighted
few
rooms.
Few of us got together, working on the idea of starting a people's art gallery. in these six rooms of mine. It was wintertime. There were no band concerts in the park. People walked.
What she was doing was totally radical at the time.
Then went home
to look at her with this postmodern lens.
Set by an open
is really
fire,
unfair.
Warm, rest themselves and look at pictures might appeal to the public. It was also suggested that there might be study classes. Young people come to see me saying how ardently they hoped the idea would be carried out.
The tombstone of Emily Carr reads.
We elected temporary officers and called a meeting of important people that could help if they
Dear Mother Earth, I think I have always specially belonged to you. I have loved from babyhood to roll upon you, to lie with my face pressed right down onto you in my sorrows. I love the look of you and the smell of you. When I die, I should like to be in you unconfined, unshrouded. The petals of flowers against my flesh, and you covering me up.
A number of wealthy people with influence. We called the meeting while the exhibition was still on the walls. The rooms were thronged. There was interest. The plan was discussed. I offered Lower East and Lower West to the city at the lowest possible rent.
She described her hometown as being 20 years behind in the appreciation of art. Its citizens had brought their outlook from the old country on the boat with them and hadn't budged since, not realizing that even back at home, ideas had changed. What hurt her most deeply of all was that she felt that her own sisters had no interest in her work if they mentioned it at all, was to criticize and insult.
Had just built herself a fine art gallery. It was endowed. Unless Victoria could do the same thing, bigger and more flamboyant than Vancouver, she would do nothing at all. The lieutenant governor said that if the city would acquire a property and erect a fireproof
Emily Carr
building,
was an extraordinarily talented woman and remarkable in many respects.
Etchings.
Very she made a career
etchings,
for herself and lived a fiercely independent life at a time when these things were unusual things for a woman of her
Victoria's
upbringing to do.
Set,
her life
set
as a painter
Beacon
was hard.
Was out of the
she
way.
Struggled for years replied, against neglect and ridicule, and though she never quite
park,
lost her conviction that one day
cars,
her way of seeing things
said,
would gain acceptance, there are long periods when her vitality as an artist was at a low ebb. At the age of 70, she began a new career as an author.
The wealthy closed their lips and their purses. The Arts and Crafts Society smiled, a high-nosed, superior smile. Li Nam,
if
the
word genius,
artist,
a word to be jealously guarded by the critic, used only on very special occasions, can be applied to any Canadian artist, it can be applied to her. She belongs to no school. Her inspiration is derived from within herself.
I'm sorry that people's disappointment did not go through. He spoke kindly about my own work. I was now an invited contributor to art shows in the East. Sympathetic criticisms were unnumbing me. A desire to paint again. After all, wrote Mr. Brown, the People's Gallery might have further crippled your own work. Victoria just is not art-minded.